Hello and welcome to the final Albion Roar of the season here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we didn't let it bounce in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, the curtain has come down on another season, and what a season it was. A highest ever league position, check. Record Premier League's point tally, check. Highest Premier League number of goals, check. Least games lost, check. In fact, it'd be fair to say that the season has probably finished a little bit too early, as our boys in the old Brighton Blue have really hit their stride of late, and I think we'd have loved to have seen a few more games this season. So today, of course, we'll look back on the season in the company of Alan Wares, Marcus Hancocks and Andy Bass, and we'll also find out how woefully wrong our pre-season predictions were.
They always are.
Well, there is a winner in amongst our ranks, I am not going to tell you who that was. But
please don't. Can I just add actually one extra thing you've got for your record stuff there? You know, you said record in the Premier League.
Yeah.
I've also got to say record pro rata. Now, back in 1982, when we got our previous highest ever finish, we ended up with 52 points, but that was from 42 games. Now, this return of 51 from 38. I know you could actually argue the toss about it. And, well, for the sake of argument, let's. But it was a highest pro rata finish in terms of points ever in the top division. All in all, amazing. Andy, Marcus, who wants to go first? Can you give us a broad overview of how you felt the season went?
Well, I thought it was sensational. And I think once we get to the predictions, I think you'll find it exceeded all of our expectations, certainly exceeded mine. To score more goals, to let fewer in, to get more points, to finish in the top 10 on the, you know, given the budget and stuff that we've done, the improvement in probably the toughest league to play in the world. It's been nothing short of astonishing. We've had some adversity in it. But we've overcome it. But we've played football that, you know, when I first started watching the Albion, I never dreamed that we'd be able to do. We could go into Anfield and taking on Liverpool and being gutted that we didn't get a win. Just incredible.
Andy, I mean, you mentioned it there. I mean, in our pre-season predictions, we've never actually done a predicted finish where we're going to finish in the table. So I mean, you said there that we've exceeded our expectations. So where did you think we should have finished, or where do you think we would have finished?
I was hoping for something around about sort of maybe like 11th, 12th or something like that, you know, an incremental improvement, because I think it's difficult to make big strides in the Premier League. It's a difficult league, and you are up against some elite teams and then some pretty good ones and then some not so good ones that can be quite stubborn. So, you know, making a big leap in this league is very difficult. And, you know, with the best win in the world, I wasn't sure that we had it in us. And I'm happy to be proved completely wrong on that score.
Marcus?
Yeah, I can't. There's not much more to add. It was a fantastic season, as you say. Probably I would have thought probably around about halfway to finish where we did. I'm absolutely delighted with. And you know, at various points of the season, you know, there was chat about you know, passports and you know who we might get in the Europa Conference and stuff like that. Obviously, that was probably just a little bit of a bridge too far. But overall, absolutely delighted. The only sort of, not that it's a downside, because everything was positive. We finished well at the end of the season, you know, we had good points tally, etc. Was perhaps the home record could have done with a little bit more of improvement.
I would say a lot of improvement, to be honest, Marcus.
Okay, I'm trying to, trying to be positive. The home record was absolutely appalling, which is a real shame. But at the same time, thank God our away form. But, you know, I don't want to sound all sort of doom and gloom and everything, because it was an absolutely fantastic season overall. And, you know, there's not much more. You know, they've done a bloody great job. And as Andy said, especially with the budget that we have, to finish in a top, you know, in a top 10, you know, Paul Barber, Tony Bloom, etc., must be absolutely bloody delighted.
Well, yeah, I mean, they've got this ambition. They've had this ambition of consistently finishing in the top 10. Well, this is a good start to that, isn't it? I mean,
well, to be honest, that whole top 10 thing was only something that came about when, probably a couple of years ago, with this sort of great big master plan, which frankly, was just around the whole notion of running the club properly. I mean, if they were going to be honest about it, I'd probably thought that they'd have said, well, top 10 within 5 years from where they were, that's absolutely fantastic. They've done it within two. Now, the trick is that, you know, have we overachieved? Have we outdone ourselves? And I think that the only time you're really going to be able to answer that is making sure we can sustain it, because it's not about reaching the top 10 and then falling away again, or even just, you know, getting higher than whatever it might be. When they're talking about being a top 10 club, they're not talking about just finishing for that one season in the top 10. They're talking about sustainability, and that's the real trick. And that's something that's going to be done off field and on field. And I think that the people have got to realize that just because we've got to ninth once, that we're going to be able to do it again, because we've got to repeat this magic over and over again.
Well, there's a cautionary tale, Marcus, because, I mean, Leeds finished ninth last season and they only escaped by the skin of their teeth this season. But they didn't, they stagnated, they didn't improve their squad, they didn't add any more numbers to it, and they just felt completely combusted.
True, but the Leeds did also have a lot of injuries, and they had only just been promoted, a bit like Sheffield United the season before that, who also finished round about ninth. And Burnley did finish ninth for 2 or 3 years ago as well. So not that I think it's a poison chalice, because, you know, we haven't just been promoted. You know, we've been down the bottom of the table for the last, you know, three or four seasons. So, you know, will we finish ninth again? I don't know. I thought Gary Lineker was quite funny when they were saying, oh, you know, if they got the striker that they really need to put the chances away, where could they finish next season? Ian Wright said, I think it was, and Gary Lineker quipped and said eighth. So so it didn't make me laugh, but yeah, I mean, but if we can finish sort of anywhere between sort of 9 and 13, and, you know, what was pleasing this season, I will be honest, is at no point, apart from maybe when we had that run of games without winning, in the sense of the run of losses, not even where we were picking up points, at no point did we really have to look over our shoulder this season. And that, I think, was pleasing. Whereas, you know, every season before that, we've always been maybe even 5 points ahead, but then somebody's won and you're like, oh no, only 2 points ahead of them now. And then we win and, you know, there's a cushion again. And then we have a little run at the end of the season and everything's fine. But, you know, at no point this season did we ever have to really seriously look over our shoulder. And that, for me, is a massive positive.
It is, because, Marcus, I mean, that's what you've been saying for the last couple of years. You just, in your glorious terminology, I just want one season when I'm not looking over my shoulder.
And we've had it. I hope that's not the only season. So, let's have more like that, because it's absolutely lovely.
Andy, you wanted to come in.
I think people underrate how good ninth is when you look at who the eight teams are above us, and I think that it shows how hard it's going to be to repeat it next year. And I'm under no illusion as to how difficult that is going to be, because you're looking at, you know, Leicester have been consistent, they've been consistently in that top six, top eight. West Ham, who have now definitely stepped up their game as a level, and then you've got, you know, United, Arsenal, Spurs, Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City, who will seem to be chiselled in stone as in that top tier for forevermore. So then we are in competition with teams like Wolves, who've been in that in that top nine for many years. Newcastle, you know, Saudi FC have now got like hundreds of millions of pounds to spend and all that obscenity that's going on up there. Obviously, our friends up the road who have always been a solid mid-tier team. You know, they've never really been, as much as we, you know, we'd love it to happen, they've never really been in serious relegation trouble. They're always there and thereabouts in that. And then you've got the likes of Villa, who are going to be spending loads of money. Everton, you know, can they get back to some semblance of mediocrity that they're going to be in that mix? So that's why this achievement this year is really good, because it's really, the competition is tough. It will be difficult for us to do it again next year. But that's not going to stop me enjoying what we did this year. I'm enjoying the moment, because if you can't look back and enjoy this, it really isn't any point in.
Okay, well, let's
absolutely. But if you're going to look at the incremental increases and improvements that we've made over the past 2 or 3 years, now, you know, obviously now we've just finished our fifth season in the Premier League. Are we established yet? Well, that's another debate in itself. But what's happening is that we're getting £100 million in each time anyway. But the gap between 16th and 9th, which is what we've just bridged this season, is one gap. Then there's probably a slightly smaller one to seventh. So let's say that there's the gap that you've got between, say, 14th and seventh is one thing. But then the gap between seventh and sixth can be about the same size sometimes.
Yeah.
And then the one between sixth and fifth. And we're talking about from here on in, giant steps. And those are steps that at the moment, and it's taken 5 years for us to get to this stage. Is it going to take 5 years to get to the next stage? Who knows? But the issue is that we've now got, if we're going to improve and see anything that's going to say, well, let's see if we can get into Europe, or let's see if we can get, you know, start challenging the top spaces. Those are the huge leaps. Like I say, the ones that we've just taken between 16th and 9th that we're going to still have to bridge. And yeah. These are ones that are still going to take about 3 or 4 years each. That's not to say that we can't do it. And who knows, we might have an absolutely outrageous season next year and actually climb to and have the kind of run that we had at the end of the season, which would take us to fifth or sixth. That's great. But you realize that with the phrase that Andy used, or one of you used just now, about the top places seem to be cemented in the same sides. You have to work so hard and put in for us to achieve it. It's going to be something that's going to be way disproportionate to the size of the club, and the task therefore is absolutely immense. So it's just so vital that we appreciate and acknowledge that the next step, should we be considered a mid-table club, the next step is still going to have to be a massive one.
Albert, you say that, I mean we're going to come to the our pre-season predictions later, but one of the conversations we were having pre-season was when we were talking about how many points are we going to get off the top six, and we had to try and work out who the top six sides were, and do we include Leicester in that now?
That's another thing, and then moving forward, who, you know, because these things are going to be slightly fluid, slightly liquid. You know, who saw West Ham sustaining their thing from last year? Good for them. So you can't tell, but we when we talk about top six, we're talking about top six teams in terms of resources, and therefore, in theory, should actually therefore be challenging the top six places in division. But of course, you look at that kind of thing, you see Everton, they've got massive resources and had an absolute stinker of a season. So it's not always, you know, shown on the pitch, you know, the size of the club. But what I would say is that the you know, the notion of hashtag teams like Brighton really should be falling away from now on.
Andy?
Yeah, I think it's good that we can now have this conversation and it not be a pipe dream. It might not happen, but I don't think it's unreasonable for us to start, you know, moving our eyes upwards in the table. And I think it is a possibility now. And I think that's been the theme of this season, is how we have... We're a better team than we were last August.
Yeah.
We've got better. We've had to deal with disruptions to the squad, obviously. The defence was particularly badly impacted by massive change. Obviously, we lost Ben White before the beginning of the season, but then we lost Adam Webster to injury for long periods of time. And of course, we lost Dan Burn in the January transfer window. And that's a key, and you know, that was the bedrock of our team, was that, you know, we were going to win games 1-0 or we weren't going to win them. And we've had to cope with that adversity, and we build it. Players have got better. Potter's managed these players really well, and he's brought players in at the right time and flicked the switches at the right time. And, you know, we have improved, which is why I am, you know, I'm very much hopeful that next season we will repeat the not having to look over our shoulder element of the season. Yeah. Whether we repeat the heady heights of ninth, I don't know. But I think we're going to be in that middle group of like six or seven teams that will be fighting it out for those.
Well, okay. Well, Andy, it's been a brilliant season. We scored some brilliant goals, and let's have a look and see what our goal of the season was. Marcus, so who pinged it in the top bins for you?
There's loads to choose from, isn't there? The one I think I enjoyed the most would be McAllister's against Everton. Because I was there and it was right in front of me. But, you know, that little back heel from Aweppo, and then he just smashed it home. for me was, you know, was an absolute delight. And as I say, because I was there, I suppose that sort of was extra special because that put us 3-1 up. And you kind of think, you know, I think it was 3-1 up and it was on game over. So, you know, that one for me would probably be my, you know, my goal of the season. There probably were better ones, to be fair, you know, but that's my one.
Yeah, well, Mwepu was the king of assists this season. And some of them were just delightful, absolutely delightful.
He was just showing off, showboating the whole time.
There's a lot more to come from it. We'll chat about that in a minute. And Andy, what about you?
Really difficult to decide. I did give this a lot of thought because there are a number of goals that were my favourite goal of the season. And I am going to choose Mwepu's goal against Liverpool because it's just a genuine stunner. You rarely get to see goals like that. It was just brilliant. And he meant it.
I was going to ask that.
He definitely meant it. I was so tempted to give it to the Mwepu goal against Arsenal because, again, that was right in front of me and it just zoomed into the net. And after Casado pulled it back, I just thought, oh, he's picked him out. I just like, he's just got to hit it. That was incredible. But I just think for sheer, like, wow, you know, that's going to be on a highlights reel for time in memoriam. That's world class. That's what you see, you know, Brazilian players do at the World Cup when you just bow down in worship of it. It was just an absolute stunner. And it was unsavable.
Well, pre-season, Andy, we were saying we just played Luton and Rangers, but Mwepu scored in that pre-season friendly against Rangers, and we're like, oh wow, you know, we've got a midfielder who shoots under the crossbar. This is amazing. And you know,
he against Luton as well.
No, he didn't score against. It was the goal was against Luton because it was 0-0 against Rangers.
Yeah,
so
yeah, 0-0 against Rangers.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, he can shoot under the crossbar, but when it's so pathetically sort of slow and daisy cutterish that the goalkeeper then just sort of farts at it and he manages to save it. Apart from that, he does know how to leather it into the back of the net. Yeah.
He did miss an absolute sitter as well earlier.
He missed two.
As well.
They rebounded off him after about 3 yards out. I'm thinking, welcome to Brighton, son.
Okay, Al, what about you?
Oh, this is not fair because... all right, if I'm going to have one, it's not necessarily one I think that's going to be on most people's radar. And what I'm going to go for is Trossard's goal at Arsenal. It was a decent enough goal in its own right. But what it was for me is that it represented, A, stopping the rot of those six defeats in a row / Norwich 0-0, and also represented the start of the kind of the run into the end of the season, and also represented that those players, should they really wish to, should show no fear because they took Arsenal apart that day and scored a couple of brilliant goals. Don't get me wrong, Mwepo's was wonderful. And it wasn't exactly the icing on the cake because it was the winner. But it's just what Trossard's goal represented, which was a real sort of fillip that said, you can do this, so go do it.
Mm. Okay.
But also, what was great about that goal was the way that Mwepu just controlled that fantastic long pass.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you could see Trossard running in, and it's all he's got to do is get it to him.
Right. We've missed those before, haven't we?
Yeah, and they were. Yeah, those are the sort of chances we have been missing, and it was an exquisite finish. I have no problem with lionizing that goal either.
I'm going to go one that wasn't even nominated in the goal of the season competition because it hadn't been scored yet, and that was actually Pascal Gross's goal against West Ham, and I can't stop watching it. It was just that move that it just West Ham had no answer for it, and that swivel and turn into and put the ball into the top corner. I mean, it was just. The way that the ball was going ping, ping, ping. And it was like...
He didn't even look, did he?
No, you know, you had like Cucurella involved. You had Welbeck. You had Mwepu. It was just... They were just dancing this merry dance along the edge of the area. And it was just... And that turn and shot was just absolutely wonderful. I mean, it was a great team goal. It was a fantastic finish. I mean, obviously, there are other goals which...
Along those lines then, Marcus, give us some, out of the other four, apart from the four we've mentioned, give us some notable shout-outs that you really enjoyed.
Well, obviously, Mopay's equaliser against Palace. I mean, we haven't mentioned that one yet. Mopay's equaliser against Southampton. That's quite a good one. Mopay's equaliser against West Ham. That's what there you go. There's a hat trick of Mopay goals for you there. One that I really did enjoy, and it might be 1-0, but actually, sort of along the lines of the Arsenal game, was actually Casado's first against Man United, which basically when we'd scored against them, and it's like, oh hello, hang on there. Now I know it was a daisy cutter P roller, but blimey, the technique for that was incredible. And you know, when it went in, it was like, oh my god, you know, we could probably get them, because Man United had started slowly anyway. But you know, when that went in, it was kind of just sort of belief just go through the team. It was, you know, and then obviously it went on to sort of, you know, and then we thought, oh, Man United can't be that bad, and we dismantled them further in the second half. But that Casado goal against Man United, I thought, does deserve more mention than it got for a lad who's 19 and he's only playing his third game or fourth game or something like that. You know, incredible. You know, that was taken like an old head. If you like,
it had the similar sort of feel to the one I mentioned with Trossard against Arsenal. It gave them the belief.
Yes,
actually, it was a first half goal that we could actually take these lumbering giants on. I mean, in a similar way that you know, we got there's also the thing of the two similar goals, because I'm also going to add in two goals that were actually not quite carbon copies, but they actually started the same way, and that's Trossard's at Anfield. And Gross's against Man United, and they started from a Sanchez ping out to Cucurella, and they weren't lumps, they weren't clearances, they were absolute pingers, right into the guy's running path, who then sort of played the ball inside, and with a bit of jiggery pokery, you know, the ball ends up in the back of the net. And in both instances, if you had to choose from those two from being goal of the season, you couldn't, because basically they were the same.
Okay, well, I'll raise you another Trossard goal then.
Go on then.
Which was his goal against Brentford, which was that no-look. No-look pass from Mwepu.
Yeah.
Right, and the volley that just looped over the goalkeeper. It was just absolutely...
I kind of think in Mwepu's pass, he absolutely shanked it. He really looked as though the ball was under his feet, and he just sort of hoofed it, sort of kind of hoping forward. But you know, we know that Mwepu is actually a lot better than that. So yeah, I mean, this is the brilliant thing here, and this is where we've got such collective positivity. And part of it, we made a brilliant start to the season, hence your point earlier, Marcus, about not looking over our shoulder, because we'd actually sort of set our goals up that way. And then obviously the brilliant end of the season is, like I say, the collective positivity. And yet at the same time, in those last sort of 5-6 games, we learn how to shoot.
Well, I mean, I've got a stat about that here, actually. I mean, shots wise, here we go. We have had 489 shots this season. This is in the league, of which 152 were on target. And who was the shootiest of them all?
Oh, I'm going to guess McAllister.
He was third.
Go on then.
Trossard.
It was Trossard, yes.
Okay.
Trossard, he had 74 shots this season. Morpay 61, McAllister 60.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
Of which...
I think we actually outperformed XG this season, which is the first time, I believe.
I can't get my head around XG. And I think
neither can I. But you know, like a couple of seasons ago, it was like, oh, Brighton should have scored, you know, four goals every game or something ridiculous like that. I think this season we actually outperformed it in the sense of, XG was relatively lower. I mean, and that sort of shows how Potter had sort of, you know, tinkered.
Well, we'll come on to some more season stats in a bit. But first, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. And as ever, in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And we have not a shirt of the week, but a shirt of the season. from young Philip this year, which might give you a clue to what year it was.
Right. Who wants to have a go at describing this?
I'll do it. This is an absolute beauty. What can I say? This is an absolute stunner. So we've got sort of like a very dark red burgundy arms and shoulders, sleeves and shoulders.
Kind of like Roma's colours.
But then it is, there's just a beautiful print, beautiful red and burgundy print on it. We seem to have some sort of cityscape at the top, which I'm thinking is going to give a clue as to where this shirt is from. Because I can see a Buddha in the outline and some sort of temples. And then underneath that, we've got this with just lovely geometric prints and sort of Far Eastern sort of decorative prints. I don't know, they look like dragons.
Look at the most important aspect of it from Phil's point of view. It's made by Hummel.
And they've excelled themselves. Absolutely beautiful. Jebba is the sponsor with a nice sort of dragon logo over the J. I think this is an absolute stunner. It appears to be some sort of bird as the badge. I'm going to say this must be like a team from Bangkok or something like that, from Thailand.
Okay.
Thailand was my guess. Yeah.
Yeah, I always thought Thailand as well.
But not quite. In the same sort of region, really. I mean, I'll put you out of your misery. And this is what Phil has to say about his shirt of the season. He says, "I have no intention of picking my favourite shirt from the Premier League this season, as it won't be a Brighton shirt. Whilst there have been some stunners across the Football League this season, I won't be picking one of those either. I thought about picking the home shirt of Worthing FC, who gained promotion to the highest level they've ever played at. But whilst it's a nice Kappa jersey, it's quite plain. Instead, I picked out something quite off the wall. This is the 2021-22 home shirt of Bhutanese Premier League side, Thimphu City." I'm really not looking forward to this, guys, I've got to tell you. wish me luck.
Good luck.
Phil says, "I think it's a bit of a stunner with hints to the arts and culture of Bhutan in the design. The team was formed in 2012 and it plays at the 45,000 capacity Chang Lim Thang Stadium, which is also serves as the country's national stadium. They've won the league title twice in 2016 and 2020 and were runners-up in this season's President's Cup. So far, they've not progressed past the preliminary rounds of the AFC Cup, which is the Europa League of Asia. Players such as Dorji, Topguy, Chishering, Dawa and Jing Mei currently make up the squad. Very few of them have links to the UK or the Albion. There is a link to the UK, though. I bought this shirt late last year and it's being sold by football author and former manager of Pope State international football side, Paul Watson. Paul is from Bristol and is currently working as a consultant for Thimphu City. The sales of the shirt were structured so the club received 100% of proceeds from each sale." Paul's also the brother of Mark Watson, the comedian. Paul's a regular on the Guardian Football Weekly and a very lovely chap to boot. It's a beautiful shirt, and you can see that one and of course hundreds of thousands of others over at oldfootballshirts.com. Just go and have a look, and there's some absolutely beauties and some absolute mingers, and we all prefer the mingers. But
this is definitely one of the beauties. It is actually, I mean, I love the burgundy, I love the red, I love the city skyline. It would be a shame, actually. You just think, well, why don't Worthing do something like that? And then you realise what is on their skyline. They've got perch on the pier, a big wheel, and some crabs.
Mm. But Paul Watson is also very much involved in Kenefa, and there's a friend of ours who actually manages a Kenefa team who's just started. Croydon now have an international football team, which is quite worrying. But speaking of Croydon, we've got one thing on the notice board this week. Friend of the show and a Rev stalwart, in fact, Palace fan. Comedian Jim Daly, he brings his football show, Football and Fatherhood, to Brighton this Sunday as part of the Fringe. The show is at the Caxton, starting at 4:15, and tickets are just a fiver, so go forth and heckle. Okay, so, I mean, the season closed this week with a brilliant win at West Ham. We followed on from the excellent win against Man United. I mean, the Amex had been a little bit, I mean, we talked about it earlier in the show. The atmosphere has been a little bit stayed, a little bit frustrated. Lots of cries of shoot, a few boos earlier in the season. I mean, it's amazing how far we've come this season. And it has been, you know, to finish as high as we did, our highest ever finish, and what we've gone through at home this season. It's kind of like chalk and cheese sometimes, isn't it, Marcus?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as good as the last couple of games were, you know, there was some poor performances, but let's not dwell on that. You know, they ended the season on a real high, and yes, they need to carry that over to next season. And just touching what Andy said earlier about disruptions as well, of course. I mean, he was substituted at half time, but of course, you know, the early season stuff with Bissouma, who was really hitting his stride, and then obviously the allegations were made, and that sort of, he spent some time out of the team. Obviously, then he sort of came, then he started to play really well again, and then went to AFCON and came back and kind of, anyway, but that aside, you know, he was substituted at half time against West Ham, and we were 1-0 down, and Potter, you know, brought on Malpay as a sort of deep lying centre forward for whatever reason, and wow, what a second half. Incredible, absolutely, absolutely incredible. I mean, we took West Ham apart. Andy made a good point on our WhatsApp group that West Ham probably, you know, it was a game too far for them, because they'd run out of puff, but I think I almost enjoyed West Ham more than I enjoyed Man United, weirdly. Just, I mean we beat Man United 4-0 and it was great, but West Ham was
or a better team.
Well, yeah, basically, yeah. Yeah, let's be honest, yeah, this season, absolutely, you know, West Ham have been absolutely brilliant this season, you know, and we dismantled them in the second half, and Potter again changed the deck, which brings me on to next season, of course, with the five substitutes. He used those really well during lockdown, and I think that's going to help us enormously next season, because Potter is not a, you know, Sean Dyche, you know, centre forward on, centre forward off, you know, let's just keep 4-4-2, you know, etc. You know, he changes it, and this is going to be good for Brighton.
Yeah, I mean, I should point out that Bissouma had a heavy cold all week, apparently,
yeah,
and that's why he was withdrawn. But I mean, tactically, Andy, I mean, the fact that, I mean, we were saying at half time we probably needed something slightly different, and we suggested that maybe Morpay might come on earlier than we possibly thought he did, and he did, an absolutely brilliant job.
Well, he brought some much needed energy and drive to the performance, and I just thought that second half was easily up there with the second half against Man United. I just thought it was mesmeric. We absolutely battered them and into submission. I mean, I just think, you know, West Ham, that season couldn't end quick enough for them after we'd torn in them. And we were at them from the off in that second half. Mm. And what really, really pleased me is, like, we're so used to seeing the end of the season for the Albion. Normally they're on the beach, you know, or at the very least in the poolside bar. And we won. We went for it. We wanted to win the game. In fairness, I thought West Ham wanted to win it as well, particularly, you know, the way they played in the first half. But I just think we had more about us, and they just simply couldn't cope. We were too quick. We were too clever. We were more physical. Everything about it was like, this team just had belief. They'd taken everything that had gone on in those last 10 games, the momentum they'd built up, and they unleashed it in that second half. And I was just beaming at the end of that game, absolutely beaming.
Al, I mean, the performance, I mean, I said it in the top of the show. I mean, we could have done with a few more games after that one. It's just a shame it was the last one of the season, because we really just hit our stride. And the football we've seen in the last six or seven games has just been, it's just blown my mind.
See, that's the point I was actually going to specifically talk about, was when you said at the top of the show, we could do with the season going on. I actually think completely the opposite. I'm thinking, this is, for me, just those quick half a dozen games at the end of the season that has shown that we can do it, and think, right, okay, now we've shown ourselves, our supporters, the rest of the division, that we do know how to do it. It's time to take stock, you know, replenish the troops, you know, replenish the squad, have a look at absolutely everything. Because what has been shown over those past, over those last six matches in the season is, to a greater extent, it shows what Graham Potter has been trying to achieve. Now, I can't help thinking that if the season had carried on, I'm not so sure that that momentum would have been carried on. So I'm thinking it's actually a good time to take stock, take pause, and think, okay, this is what we can carry on into next season. And from there on in, who knows what could happen. Yeah, all right, we've discussed, we know it's a massive leap to go up to the next couple of spaces, up the next couple of positions, but we've actually now got a time to actually take a look around and say, right, what happens next? So, now, in that sense, I'd say that I'm quite glad the season's finished. And more from, and also from that point of view, as supporters, we can actually just sort of, I guess, smile through the summer, you know, appreciating the positivity that those last six games brought us.
Yeah, absolutely. Andy?
Yeah, I mean, basically that entire sort of run, basically is from, from the Norwich 0-0 game. So then we only conceded one against Arsenal, didn't concede against Spurs. We won't talk about Man City. Sloppily, we gave away two goals against Southampton. Then we go to Wolves, who are notoriously tight in the letting goals in department, and we batter them 3-0, and that could have been more. We then tear apart Man United with another four goals. Then we went back to being the great old Albion, who couldn't hit a barn door from 5 yards against Leeds, and we should have been out of sight in that game, but we only scored the one. And then finish off with another three, which easily could have been more. Just everything, you know, everything about that final period was just so positive. It was, we were on the front foot the whole time apart. And even like the game against City, we were pretty good until they, sneakily scored. But everything about it, we got momentum. We also, we took the end of the season seriously. You know, we had done well and we could easily have settled for 12th or something like that. But we didn't. We got into that top 10. We did earn that extra money, which, you know, actually was quite a lot in the end over the course of that afternoon. Mm. We earned about 2 or 3 million quid, which is, you know, kind of paid for somebody's wages. And just really good momentum. It's different to what we're used to, because we're normally used to the damp squib end of the season.
Okay. Well, let's move on from that then. And I've asked you for your highlight of the season. So, Marcus, what was your highlight of the season?
Highlight of the season, I know we said it sort of earlier on in an earlier show, but I'm going to have to go for Malpai's equaliser against Crystal Palace. Just I'll say it before I say it again. But that is one thing that does bring me a smile to my face, at the fact that when we were leaving Selhurst Park, all you could hear was Albion, Albion, Albion after the game. You know, they thought they'd won it. It was Zaha's 10 millionth game for Palace or whatever, you know, and it was all about him, and right at the last minute, you know, and Malpai giving the ears to the Palace fans. So for me, that's my moment of the season. There are many, many moments of the season, but that for me is my standout one.
Brilliant. Andy?
Well, this is my highlight of the season. My highlight, not moment of the season.
Yeah.
My highlight of the season is 4-0 victory over Manchester United, because, quite frankly, we've owed them a long time for this. We've been waiting for us to get the results that our performances against Man United has deserved. They were wretched. They were just like feeling sorry for themselves, petulant, ill-disciplined, and we were focused and we just tore them apart. We could have doubled that score and it still would have
been
Man United. It was exceptional. And yeah, I've been dreaming of watching us play like that against a high-profile opponent like that. And, Man United finally got their just desserts, and, I loved it.
Hypothetical question to all three of you. Would you trade off that 4-0 win against Manchester United for a 4-0 win against Crystal Palace if it meant that we'd only drawn with Man U?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to take that deal.
Where do I sign?
Let's face it,
Palace beat Man United as well.
When you said we've owed them that, I'm thinking actually it's Crystal Palace that we owe a good hiding.
Oh, we owe Crystal Palace a 4-0.
Oh, I've got a list.
5-0. 6-0. We owe them 6-0.
Go on, AD, what's your moment of the season?
My moment of the season, I mean, there are many. I mean, you can look back
obviously at
that goal line clearance from Cucurella, which was just physically impossible. I still don't know how he did it. But I think as an actual moment, I thought it was actually Shane Duffy, not just playing, but scoring against Watford. Because, you know, we thought we'd seen the last of him in an Albion shirt. But for him to actually not just come back, but to actually play, to start and actually score, that was, how much did that mean to him? How much did that mean to his family who've been gone through the mill as well? And, you know, it was just a beautiful, beautiful moment. And it's things like that that make this club special, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So for my part, it's actually something I wasn't there for, but I did see it on the box. It was kind of a 5-minute moment that you could actually squeeze into one. And this was the Chelsea fans at Stamford Bridge keeping the ball, highlighted by the fact that when one of them tried to kick the ball into the back of the stand, he ended up taking his mate's head off instead. For me, the moment of the season, especially exacerbated by Danny Welbeck equalising 2 minutes later. Yeah. Raspberry's outhousery flicking V's would have been well appreciated and would have been well appropriate. In the end, we just celebrated until little Timmy Tommy Tuchel started grizzling about how many penalties they should have. Yeah. No, we battered them that day.
We did, absolutely did. We scored them. It's just a shame that we couldn't actually score and actually come home with all 3 points because we still haven't beaten Chelsea. So that's something we've got to try and improve on next season.
Well, actually, I mean, it also raises another point there, isn't it? I mean, I think it was that they were on top until they scored. And then after that, it was I won't say it was one-way traffic, but certainly we had the better of it. But also, and this is where I think we could tie on to something we're going to go on to next, it's the performance of, and I think we worked this out, the 10th choice centre-back pairing of Joel Veltman and Dan Byrne, keeping Romelu Lukaku, fridge freezer in human form, quiet. And in that sense, that for me is actually along the lines of, well, I've always been a fan of Joel Veltman, but for me, he came of age that day, certainly as an Albion player. But, you know, then I've always been a massive fan of his, even preferring him at right back to Tarik Lamptey. So it was just, I'm really pleased about his performance that day.
Okay. Well, let's go on to player of the season then, Al, because, I mean, you've mentioned Veltman there. I mean, he's a player that's featured quite highly on the list, which, one of the things I've got on here, I mean, we might as well do this at the same time, was I've got unsung hero, and my answer would have been Joel Veltman, okay. But it appears he's not that unsung at all.
Well, yeah, very, very much sung, but without his own song. does he have one yet?
No.
Right, there's the next one. Now, what it was we asked all the people who were guests of the show this season to come up with their top three players of the season. Not every player was voted for, naturally, but there was plenty of interest and everyone came up with their top three. Naturally, you could never guess who absolutely murdered this poll. Not as in murdered Jakub Modra. He's only got a broken leg, no, obviously Mark Cucurella absolutely demolished this poll. In second place was the bug-eyed mad Belgian Leandro Trossard, and in third place his Dutch counterpart Joel Veltman. There was a few votes here and there for Yves Bissouma, who frankly should have been player of the season last season, and the odd one here and there for Lewis Dunk and Enoch Mwepu. But apart from that, it's a poll that was absolutely taken to the cleaners by Mark Cucurella.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still like claiming that brilliant interview when with the players where Lewis Dunk proclaimed it to me. Congratulations on winning the Lewis Dunk Award. It was just genius.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that was the Players Player Award that, frankly, I think everyone else was too scared to vote for anyone else. But then they realised that actually, if Lewis Dunk had won it, then they'd know it was a fix.
Okay. So, I mean, you, Marcus, Andy, you both agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. I mean, I actually...
Okay.
Right, can I just say, AD, that everyone who voted, all but one, put Mark Cookerer in their top three anyway. And the vast majority, I think it was all bar about five people, had him as their first choice. So it gives you an example as to how popular the fella is.
So, so would you like to know who you actually voted for pre-season?
No, but go on.
Yeah, go on.
None of you were right.
Cookerell hadn't signed at that point.
Yeah, there's his point. Cookerell hadn't signed. But Andy Bass, you said Lewis Dunk. Marcus, you went for Rob Sanchez.
Okay.
Al, you went for Biss. I went for... I sat on the fence a little bit. I said, I wasn't expecting Biss to still be here. So I said, if he's still here, Biss, assume if he's not Welbeck. So, both wrong. Well, Phil went for Adam Webster.
But like I say, to be fair, I mean, sometimes we do actually put as yet unsigned as an option. But let's face it, he was still in Tokyo with the Spanish Olympic squad. So,
I'll come back to those in a minute. So, I mean, we've had 24 players play for us in the Premier League this season.
Okay.
Which is, I think, quite a high figure. But when you consider, and I'd forgotten this until I had to double check it, but Jürgen LaClaudia did actually play for us in the Premier League this season.
He did. He came off the bench, didn't he, at one point in the game? Great. I don't remember that. I don't know if he started.
It was in the 0-0 against Leeds. He came on.
Do you think that was a bet that Graham Potter lost?
Yeah. That was actually also a game, the game where Jeremy Sarmiento made his first team debut as well.
Okay.
Marcus, I'm going to go through these a little bit. But your wild card was... We were going to score every penalty. And in fact...
grief.
As long as Malpo doesn't take it.
We've been awarded seven penalties this year, four of which were scored. We were sixth in the league for this. City, Chelsea, Arsenal and Palace, Liverpool, all above us in that regard. But
Palace always are.
And actually, I mean, last season we hit the woodwork quite a lot. Who hit the post most this season?
Trossard.
That was last season's champ.
I'm going to say McAllister.
McAllister was third on this one.
Again?
Oh, actually, no, he was second. No, he was second, sorry. Jakob Moda was the woodwork king.
Oh, yes, of course.
Oh, yeah.
He hit the up white four times. Trossard only twice. Ali McAllister three times. Welbeck, surprisingly, was the most wasteful in front of the goal with 12 big chances missed. Morpay only actually missed five big chances, according to the official Premier League stats. Modder and McAllister both on four. And Basumi led the way with yellow cards with 10, followed by Duffy with 7. And bear in mind how little he paid. That's quite impressive, Shane. Morpay also got 7. Dunk only got 2 yellows this season, but did pick up a red. And don't forget that Dunk was probably our second best goalkeeper this season as well. He did actually keep a clean sheet, unlike Steele, who when he played, didn't. But okay, back onto these pre-season predictions. So top scorer, Phil went for Danny Welbeck. Al, you went for Morpay. Andy, you went for Morpay. Marcus, Florin Andoni, explain.
I do remember that now. Well, you know, hey ho.
And I also went for Morpay. So, I mean, we can take half a point each for those who said Morpay because he was joint top scorer. Breakthrough player. Al, well done. Congratulations. You win.
What did I say?
You said Casado.
At least I said it right then.
Yeah. And Andy, you went for Leo Ostergaard.
Marcus, well, to be fair, at Genoa, he did.
Yeah. I did. Yeah, didn't say who for.
Yeah.
Marcus, you went for Hayden Roberts, who didn't even get on the pitch. Phil went for Andy Zakiri, who will be coming back next season, obviously. I went for Reda Khadra, who at least he did get a player of the season, a goal of the season at Blackburn. So that was well done. Okay,
so in that sense, do you consider, because I assume you're saying when you say breakthrough, you mean as in at the club?
Yeah, I didn't say which club.
I think you need to stipulate that for the next preseason.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. For points against the top six, Andy, you went for 11. Phil said 8. Marcus, 10. Al, you said 12. I said 12. The total was, in fact, 13.
Ooh.
So, I mean, that was, I mean, I worked that on. I mean, we did have the argument about who was going to be in the top six, and we did include Leicester. I haven't actually done that in the actual 13. I've done that against the traditional top six. So, but 13, that's an improvement on anything really. That's pretty good. Andy, your wild card. Do you know what it was?
No.
It was the same as it always is. You should know.
What? We're going to score 50 goals.
Yeah. Yes. Andy, score 50 and have.
I'm not doing that again next year. We're never going to score 50 goals ever.
We weren't far off. We weren't far off. Al, your wild card was we would get 12 or more points against the relegated sides. Now, obviously, the relegated sides went right to the last day of the season, so this could have fluctuated a little bit. But against the three sides that went down, we actually got 11. Points.
Oh, it's not too shabby. It's better than normal, I'm sure.
Yeah, last few seasons has been about 4.
So, I mean, to be honest, it felt like 4 this year when we drew with Norwich twice. But you know, it was. Have I missed anything? Like basically, my wild card. Phil's wild card was that Lewis Dunk would be sold, so he did really well there. Thanks, Phil. And my wild card was, which Andy went completely mental about at the time. He thought I was bringing the mood of the camp down.
And what was it?
I said, and I was wrong. Oh, hands up, I was wrong. That Tarek Lamptey would only make 10 appearances this season.
And what did he make?
30. Yeah. But he did only start 16 games. So, but he did. Yeah. So, no,
I have no recollection of us drawing against Arsenal. What was the score?
It was 0-0. It was pinning it, throwing it down with rain. It was the worst, horrific day ever. I missed that game, actually.
We did play really well, but Duffin should have scored with a header. It was either from a corner or a cross.
Oh, that, yes. Yeah, okay.
It was sort of easier to miss type of thing, but, you know.
So that's basically seasons in a number, seasons in an overview. Obviously, we'll be back at the end of July, beginning of August. Albion Royal will return. But Andy, Marcus, Adi, let's just leave it with your thoughts here. What, here we are at the end of the season, what will you be looking for next season? Andy, do you want to go first, mate?
I'll be looking for us to continue playing really nice, expansive football and just moving the ball quicker and then hopefully some more goals, preferably 8 more goals, and my wild card will eventually come true. But just more of the same. I just want to see us playing this lovely football, you know, positions, missions. I mean, I want to see more of that. I've been really entertained, and I think if we can do it on a more regular basis, that'll be terrific for me. But onwards and upwards.
Great stuff. Marcus?
For me, it would be an improvement to the home record, please. Away was an absolutely outstanding season, but I'd probably take a few of the, take a few less of the away wins and more at home, just because, you know, in front of 30,000, you know, the Amex, when it gets going, is really rocking. But as I say, that's what I'd be looking for next season. And again, hopefully a season where we don't look over our shoulder, you know, up, not down.
Go on, AD.
Pretty much parroting what Marcus just said, really. I mean, the home form has been pretty dreadful for the most part. And, you know, we this is something which we say every season. This is something which I'm hoping not to say next season, but we've left too many points out on the pitch. Games where we've been absolutely dominated, we've quite often come away with only a point or nothing. So to turn those losses in or draws into wind, that's what we need to do. You know, we haven't been terrible at home. It's just, I mean, you look at that Leeds game where we had the booing. It was, we absolutely dominated that game. We could have scored six or seven on another day, but it, you know, it's just small margins, and sometimes you just want it to go in. Next season, I want to see us not stagnate. I don't want to, you know, Leeds finished ninth last year, as I said earlier, which is where we finished this year. I have a lot more confidence in our board and in our hierarchy to actually improve us, regardless if anyone does actually go. I mean, we're all looking to see if Bissouma does go. If he does, it does go, depending on where he goes with our best wishes. We don't want him to. I mean, you know, this Aston Villa rumor persists. I mean, they just signed a player in that position, so maybe that has flown the roost, that one. But you know, we wouldn't want to sell him to anyone below us. We would, if he went to a top Premier League side. Monaco had been linked with him today. You know, or he would fit into any top side in Europe. So I just would like to see that if he does go, he does go to somewhere else. But we've got the succession planning in place, so I'm quietly confident about that. But let's not stagnate and let's improve that for home form. Alan?
For my part, it's something that I ask for every single season. And in whatever form it takes, I just want to see an improvement. If I see Potter's tactics improve, if I see the shooting improve, if I see the defending improve, if I see the relationship between the keeper and absolutely every single aspect of the game that the Albion play, we just want to see improvements. However it comes along, whatever form it takes, I just want to see that we are progressing. Any aspect of it that's regression is not what we want to see. Even if it means we finish ninth again, that's fine. But we could end up with a higher points total, a better goal-scoring tally. Who knows? But these kind of things, all the while we achieve a successful sense of progression, we will get to be a better and bigger club. And this is what I think every Albion fan is striving for. That's what I'm looking for next season.
And a cup. We'd like a cup, please. That would be nice. But that has been it. That's been the season on the Albion Roar. So, of course, thank you to Andy Bass and Marcus Hancock. Thank you to Alan Wares. Thank you to everyone that's been on the show this season. Of course, thank you to Phil Shelley at oldfootballshirts.com and to Radio Reverb for their continued support. We'll be back. We might be back throughout the summer, possibly for a couple of specials, but look out for those. But in the meantime, have a brilliant summer and we'll see you all again next season. And thanks for listening. See you then. Bye.
It's the time of the season when love runs high. In this time, give it to me easy and let me try with pleasured hands to take you in the sun to promised lands, to show you everyone. It's the time of the season for love. What's your name? Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
Is he rich like me? Has he taken any time
to show
you what you need to live?
Tell it to me slowly.
Tell you why
I really want to know. It's the time of the season for love.
What's your name?
What's your name?
Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
Here is he rich like me? Has he taken?
Has he taken
any time?
Any time to show?
To show you what you need to live.
Tell it to me slowly.
Tell you.
Really want to know, it's the time of the season.